This is Greater LA, KCRW show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Your own experience and who you get your information from are good determining factors as to how bad you think crime is in Los Angeles. If you watch Fox News, you'd think it was something out of the movie The Purge.
Now, my next guest says if you're planning to go to Los Angeles, the police cannot guarantee your safety.
With me now, a string of smash-and-grab robberies combined with an uptick in home invasion attacks have Los Angeles residents on edge.
Critics slam California's soft-on-crime policies.
It's a famous complex in Los Angeles resembling a war zone with barbed wire-like fencing being put up to stop potential smash-and-grab thieves. Now, while
but other news outlets, CBS and NBC, have been covering high-profile criminal activity as well.
The most brazen of crimes breaking out across the Golden State.
Smash-and-grabs, luxury store shakedowns, the pillaging of department stores.
Family in the Pacific Palisades is the latest victim of the crime wave that has plagued Southern California.
To be clear, violent crime is up in Los Angeles, as it is in cities all across the country. But other kinds of crime, even burglaries, are down. Today, we're tackling the perception of crime versus reality, the politics of it in the campaign arena, and how it is prosecuted, which is where we start right now. When George Gascon was sworn in as L.A.'s district attorney last December, he vowed an end to seeking the death penalty or even life without parole, an end to prosecution of minors as adults, an end to cash bail. The list went on. And Gascon has made it clear he wants to put an end to very long sentences, even for some of the most serious violent crimes. That's a big change. And he's faced a lot of resistance, including from within his own office and from seekers of his ouster. There's a second recall attempt underway, with tough-on-crime advocates blaming reform-minded folks like Gascon for a rise in violent crime. Jennifer Medina is a national politics reporter for The New York Times. She recently co-authored an article about D.A. Gascon titled, "He's Remaking Criminal Justice in L.A., but How Far is Too Far?" And she's here right now with us. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Steve.
It seems like Gascon and other progressive prosecutors like him are they're in this process of reimagining what their office is there to do, to put people away who commit crimes. He's a prosecutor. How does Gascon define the role and the goal of the district attorney?
Well, Gascon is part of what a group of prosecutors who call themselves reform-minded prosecutors. And they really try, and Gascon included, are trying to think of their job in terms of public health, is how they would frame it. And they are saying, well, what we want to do is bring down reoffenders. We don't want people to come out of jail and reoffend. And there's all sorts of evidence that shows that longer sentencing, which we've done in the U.S. for many, many years, doesn't necessarily lead to lower crime. So Gascon is just trying to reimagine effectively what his office has been doing, what the DA's office has been doing for decades.
But he has been met with resistance from the get-go, right? Like from the time he was sworn into office.
Absolutely. And he has also taken the approach, and this is what makes him different from other DAs, other reformed DAs across the country. He took the approach that the change had to be sweeping and had to be made right away. So almost minutes after he took office, he released these sweeping reforms and said, the way you've been doing things for decades doesn't improve public safety. In fact, it's made things worse, and you need to completely change it. And sort of predictably, that engendered a lot of criticism and a lot of bad feelings within the office and a lot of resistance. And that's what he's been battling the whole time. And he doesn't have a lot of tolerance for disagreement, but he doesn't have any mechanism to get rid of people, really, who disagree with him because of the way the civil service and unions are set up in L.A.
Well, explain that a little bit, like the way the unions are set up. Like they have support groups, in essence, right?
Well, one thing that is also unusual about the DA's office in L.A. is they have their own union and they have a lot of civil service protections. So in other DA's offices across the country, if a DA comes in and wants to change things all around and somebody doesn't like it and resists it and defies orders, the DA can get rid of that person, can just fire them. That's not the way it works in L.A. It's much more difficult to dismiss people. You can change people around, which Gascon has done, but he can't wholesale change the office by hiring new lawyers to replace the lawyers who've been there for many years.
In a situation like this with Gascon, and he's got all these underlings who are like, no, we don't like the way this is going. In some cases, they are joining efforts to get him recalled, right?
There's a couple things that they have done to push back. One thing that has happened is that there's a pretty vocal group of deputy district attorneys who are involved with the recall, who are public on Facebook and other social medias with their criticism, have gone on TV and held news conferences to criticize Gascon. That's one group. There's also a group of deputies who are going into court and saying, look, this is the edict of the office. This is what the district attorney wants, but I don't actually think this is right. And then, of course, the third thing that happened was there was a lawsuit from the DA's union against many of Gascon's policies. And that lawsuit has so far curbed some, but not all, of the changes he wanted to make.
You know, victims of violent crime, these are people who have lost family members to murder. Some of them are angry about the reduced sentences for these people who committed the crimes. You talked about one scenario in particular with a young man named Andrew Cachou. Tell us about that case.
So Andrew Cachou was convicted of murder when he was 17, just before he turned 18. And one of the things that Gascon has really focused on is treating adolescents not as adults. So Cachou was released because he had been convicted at the age of 17. Because Gascon is so focused on releasing people who are minors, he got out.
Does Gascon see these decisions, you know, that he's making as political? I mean, obviously, he's got to see the political risk, right? If someone gets released early and commits another violent act, or, you know, there is some sort of recidivism despite, you know, what he's been saying.
I mean, I think that he knows that there is a risk in these things happening. What he would say is there's a risk on the other side, too. There's a risk of keeping people in too long. There's a risk of recidivism when you churn people out. So he sees both sides as a risk, and he's willing to take this risk. He's saying the way we've done things for decades wasn't working. We've got to try something new.
We've talked on this program about the recall effort that started a few months after he took office. It fizzled back in September. But there's a new effort now as well. This is an effort by, I guess it's the former DA, Steve Cooley, a Republican, right, who's co-chairing
right.
this effort, and a former L.A. County District Attorney, and Desiree Andrada, a Democrat, and the mother of a 20-year-old who was beaten and thrown off a cliff back in 2018. I mean, is that's a pretty powerful combo in a recall effort. Is there any reason to think that this one might be more successful?
I think it's really hard to know at this point. I mean, I think the DA's office is not something I think everybody quite understands, that regular citizens understand. So if the second recall effort goes out and riles people up, it's possible it will succeed where the first one failed.
Especially, you know, with the fact that certain crimes are up, violent crime certainly in Los Angeles is up in the wake of the pandemic, right? Like that perception, that reality is there sort of staring Gascon in the face.
That's right. And there's no evidence that his policies are directly tied to it. But in the political arena, it almost doesn't matter. If some voter thinks, look, crime is up, I want to blame this on the DA, then the recall effort could succeed.
Jennifer Medina, who's national politics reporter for The New York Times. Jennifer, thanks for your reporting, for taking time out to talk to us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
You know, if this kind of programming is important to you, taking a deeper look, a deeper dive into crime and the perceptions thereof, the prosecution thereof in greater LA, why not support that kind of programming? It's KCRW's Season of Giving Back Fund Drive, and we're asking for your support right now. Think of, you know, the end of the year coming up in just a couple of weeks. Can you believe it? The end of the year. My goodness. What are you grateful for in this holiday season? If KCRW is on your list, give now at kcrw.com/give. And today, you can double your impact. And when you donate now to help us reach our ambitious one-day goal of $25,000, if we hit the mark, well, KCRW board member Silas Myers will match it. That's $50,000 for KCRW if we get there by midnight tonight. But we can't do it without you. Go to kcrw.com/give. And thank you so much for your support. You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Now, if you look at the headlines, it is easy to get a sense that crime is running amok in L.A. A high-profile murder in Beverly Hills, a shooting near an elementary school in Wilmington, several follow-home robberies, and, of course, all the smash-and-grab thefts at high-end department stores. The LAPD even approved a $200 million budget increase for next year, partially citing a rise in crime. But let's take a look. A quick look at the actual numbers. Gabe Kahn is professor of professional practice of journalism at USC's Annenberg School. He's also publisher and editor of Crosstown, which uses data to tell the stories of Los Angeles. Gabe, welcome to you.
Hi, Steve.
In a news conference last week, D.A. Gascon said that most crime was actually down, apart from homicides. Is he right? And what does data show?
So the answer is yes. Most crime is down. That doesn't mean that the way that people experience public safety is positive. A lot of people have, you know, heightened sense of vulnerability, partly because there are certain types of crimes that have basically skyrocketed.
I mean, is this like you watch action news or whatever it is on television and it's like, you know, you're just thinking, oh, my goodness, what's going on? It's like the purge.
Well, that's absolutely right. And I think that there's a huge amount of responsibility that news media bears for creating this type of impression. Particularly if you're looking at simply what I would call crime by anecdote, if you're looking at individual incidents, they are terrible. They are tragic. But are they indicative of what's really happening in the city? And the answer is, in some cases, yes. For example, homicides are way up and have been rising since the beginning of the pandemic. But other crimes that make people feel very insecure, such as home invasions or burglaries, are actually very down. In fact, some of the lowest numbers that we've seen in over a decade. However, when people go on social media and they see their neighbor post a video of someone prowling around their house or something like that, That's what I would call sort of crime by anecdote. That creates a generalized feeling of unease and insecurity.
Some parts of the city, Gabe, are always hardest hit, though, right? I mean, how do these numbers vary by neighborhood?
Absolutely. That's the other thing, is that it is very localized. So, you know, we had in July 48 homicides in the city of Los Angeles, more than have been in any month for over a decade. A lot of those homicides have happened in South Los Angeles. So other people in other parts of the city, even though they're sharing the same city that is experiencing this homicide crisis, they're not touched by it in the least.
Where are we historically? I mean, is this still? I mean, some have claimed. I think Michael Moore, the chief of police at LAPD, says it's one of the safest times to live in LA. Is he right?
In the aggregate, yes, that is true. The crime rate, you know, crime rates have been going down, not just in LA, but nationally over, if you look back several decades, they are much lower. Already in 2021, we have more homicides in any year than we've had since 2010. That's still a fraction of what LA was experiencing in the early 90s. And it's that perspective is important. If someone is a victim of a home invasion, a burglary, it's obviously going to make them feel very vulnerable, and they might communicate that to their neighbors. But the fact is, the burglary rate is lower than it has been in many, many years.
Gabe Kahn at USC's Annenberg School, publisher and editor of Crosstown. Gabe, thanks.
Always a pleasure, Steve.
Well, as Gabe Kahn just mentioned, the media play a role in perhaps how you perceive crime. Well, so do LA's elected and appointed leaders, and they've been busy this past month.
We will find you, we will arrest you, and we will prosecute you.
There are consequences for those individuals who are tempted to engage in this type of conduct.
That was Mayor Eric Garcetti and LAPD Chief Michael Moore responding to a slew of burglaries and robberies. We're going to talk about the politics of crime now with Dan Schnur, professor of politics and communications at USC and former Republican strategist. Dan, welcome.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Erica Smith is a columnist at the LA Times. She joins us as well. Hi, Erica.
Hi, thanks for having me.
First to you, the mayor held a press conference earlier this month responding to the robberies, the smash and grab robberies at the Grove and other big department stores around L.A., but also to the brutal, fatal shooting of Beverly Hills philanthropist Jacqueline Avon following a burglary at her house. You wrote a column called Don't Let Jacqueline Avon's Shooting Get Pulled into L.A.'s Crass Politics of Crime. That was the headline. Did her death get politicized? And if so, how?
Yeah, I mean, it was such a brutal killing of Miss Avon. And like, you know, it was just, you know, she was so well known among so many of the politicians and people in Los Angeles. I think that, you know, Garcetti wanted to hold that press conference, but he had to mention this brutal killing. It's also tracks with the number of follow home robberies that we've seen in L.A. and across California. And so I think that there's a perception out there that people are afraid and that people feel unsafe. And I think both the mayor and the police chief felt a responsibility to say something about it. But, you know, it's a slippery slope, right? There's the idea of the perception of crime, then there's the actual numbers about crime. And, you know, if you look at the numbers, at least in terms of robberies, they're up, but they're not dramatically up for, say, over the last 5 years. So how much of this is just, you know, what we see on TV news, what we see on Instagram, what we see on Twitter, what we read in the paper in LA Times, versus what's actually happened in terms of numbers.
And what do we know, Erica, about the suspect in that? I know he shot himself in the foot because he was trying to burglarize another home in the Hollywood Hills. How did his story play into the political response?
So, you know, the person that was arrested, Beverly Hills Police announced that they had arrested Ariel Maynor in connection with the crime. He was found a few miles away outside of another house that police believe he had burglarized. He was found in possession with an AR-15, which the police have said is the same bullet and same gun that shot Jacqueline Avon. And so there is this perception of who this person is. I mean, this is a person with a lengthy criminal history, both in terms of burglaries and robberies. He was out on parole, though he did serve a full sentence. But now there's this perception that, you know, police and prosecutors have been, quote unquote, soft on crime, that he is a person that should not have been out on the streets, that he should have been in jail, that he, you know, name your, you know, ballot proposition that passed that people believe is allowing people like Ariel Maynor to be out on the streets to, in theory, shoot people, assuming he's even convicted of the crime. So I think there's a huge slippery slope there, right? I mean, we don't know if this person actually committed the crime. He's been charged, but he hasn't been convicted. This is a person who did serve his full sentence. There's questions, though, about, you know, why he was released and didn't have a full address, whether he was checking in as parole officer. I think there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. But I think that jumping to the conclusion that criminal justice reform in the state is responsible for this horrible crime in Beverly Hills is leaping to a lot of conclusions.
Dan Schnur, we talked earlier about a big shift in support away from tough on crime policies, but we're seeing now that opponents of George Gascon, the L.A. County District Attorney, he's been pushing these reforms. Well, they're blaming him for the rise in crime. As Erica says, you know, you can't really look at all of this from a reform aspect that one thing leads to another. I mean, talk a little bit about how crime has been used as this political football, as a political issue.
I think one of the things that we've seen over the years is that people tend to focus less on data and statistics and more on particular stories. I can ask the average voter, the average citizen, how many young African-American men were killed by police officers in the United States in the last 2 years? And most people won't know that statistic. But if I ask them, who is George Floyd? They'll immediately know the answer. And so these individual high-profile emotional instances tend to lend disproportionate weight to the debate in both directions. It's individual stories like that of Miss Avant, which tend to capture the public opinion to a much greater degree.
Local leaders say the solution to the recent spate of robberies, at least the smash and grabs that we've been seeing, seems to be, you know, getting more cops on the streets. Police Chief Michael Moore says new officers are coming. City council members pulled back from the budget cut to the LAPD. We saw, you know, in the wake of the George Floyd murder, we saw, you know, this idea that maybe we should shift money away from from police to maybe more social services, things like that. But then now we're talking about stepping up patrols and giving more money. How do you react to politicians saying more cops are the answer?
What most politicians do is they follow public opinion very, very closely. And what we're seeing once again, not here in Los Angeles, but around the state and around the country, are elected officials who talked in very, very emotional terms last year about moving away from harsher and stricter criminal justice policy in the wake of the tragic murders of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. We're seeing them move back very significantly and noticeably in the other direction. I mentioned that it's not just LA. If it's okay, I'd like to read you a quote from the mayor of San Francisco, London Breed, who held a news conference yesterday announcing similar measures to those that Mayor Garcetti has in Los Angeles. London Breed, the very, very progressive mayor of San Francisco, said, quote, "It's time that the reign of criminals who are destroying our city comes to an end. It comes to an end when we take the steps to be more aggressive with law enforcement, more aggressive with the changes in our policies, and less tolerant of all the bullies that destroyed our city." That's not a Republican. That's not even a centrist Democrat. It's one of the most progressive voices in California Democratic politics. And we're seeing this reflected across the state and the country, which is dramatically changing the nature of the debate, and I think creates a real challenge for Gascon as he faces a potential recall.
Yeah, she's even, I mean, this progressive mayor of San Francisco wants to send, you know, a slew of cops onto the streets in the Tenderloin, the infamous Tenderloin district of San Francisco. So you're right. This is it certainly is a different message. Erica, you know, when you see politics like this, I mean, we're just a year and a half from the George Floyd protests and you know, what we saw where people were demanding that more money get shifted from police to social services. And here we are. Hey, more cops. Let's give police departments more money. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's really fascinating how fast things can change. And they really have. I think that it leaves, as Dan was mentioning, you know, a smaller path for activists and people who want to see police reform to kind of move forward, because public opinion, or at least the perception of public opinion anyway, is definitely changing as, you know, there are more and more headlines about, you know, violent crime and robberies. So I think that at the very least, this effort for police reform and further criminal justice reform is going to be chilled out for a bit. Whether there's a resurgence going forward, I guess, remains to be seen. But I do know, in talking to the activists that I've spoken to, they are still very much dedicated to their side of the cause. And so it'll be interesting over the next year to see what happens with that. But it is a bit of a whiplash, definitely.
Dan, politically, do you think, you know, whoever succeeds Garcetti, Mayor Eric Garcetti, do you think they're thinking politically about, you know, how do we, I mean, LA has got this bad rap that, you know, somehow crime is just, you know, terribly up and all of that, that they're trying to politically sort of walk this tightrope?
The candidates are certainly thinking of this. And what's going to be particularly interesting as the mayor's race unfolds is the role in particular that Councilman Joe Biscaino plays in the debate, who has been much more aggressive, not just on criminal justice issues, but on issues relating to homelessness. And as the mood changes in the way that Erica and I have been talking about, there's going to be tremendous pressure on more traditionally progressive Democrats, people like Karen Bass, like Kevin DeLeon, like Mike Fuhrer, to respond to a more aggressive approach of the type that we'd hear from Buscaino, and if he decided to run, from Rick Caruso.
I want to thank you both for coming on. Erica Smith, columnist at the LA Times. Dan Schnur, professor of politics and communications over at USC and former Republican strategist. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, to get you in the holiday spirit, model trains in a museum in Pasadena devoted to them. Hope you'll stay on track. I'm so sorry. To listen to tomorrow's episode of Greater LA. Always online at kcrw.com/GLA. Tell us how you're doing. Tell us how we're doing. Ask any questions you might have. And, of course, subscribe to the podcast, too. And as you reflect on the year 2021, we want to hear from you as well. You know, COVID is still here, but so are vaccines. Maybe a sense of normalcy, too, this year. What was the most challenging thing about the year for you? What are you most grateful for in the wake of all the ups and downs? Share your story with us. KCRW.com/2021review. That's KCRW.com/2021review. Or you can call us at 424-538-8581. 424-538-8581. Tell us your story, how you're doing in 2021. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thank you for your ears and time this evening. Have a great night. Happy holidays.